Let the record show that the House Transportation meeting started at 2:10 on March 26th, and that the following House members were present. Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Gaddis, Representative Isaacson, and myself, Representative Wilson. And I'd like to recognize our staff today. Nancy Hemingway is over here. She's our House Recording Secretary. And Danaya Burns is our LIO monitor over here. And my committee aide is Becky Rooney. So before we start, please silence your phones. And today we have two bills on our agenda. Hopefully we'll be able to get to both of them. And we have House Bill 176, Experimental Vehicle Plates, and HJR 13, Homeport New Coast Guard Cutter in the State. So if you can come forward with your, for House Bill 176, and Representative Thompson, and his committee aide, or maybe Chief of Staff, Jane Pearson, and introduce your bill and explain the changes to the CS. And would you move our CS?
I'm going to explain the bill first and let you do that.
Yes. Madam Chair, I move CS for Bill 176. I guess it's no longer version U. Version U.
Okay. Hearing no objection, we have version U before us. And if you can, you know, I don't think you really need to tell us the differences so much because we haven't had the bill in the committee before. And so if you can just tell us what the U version is, and we'll proceed from there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Steve Thompson. I'm the representative from House District 3. And I will just go into the HB 176, make a short presentation, and then let my staff take over and explain it in depth and with the CS also. House Bill 176 is something that's, I feel, very badly needed in the state. Back when I was mayor about 10 years ago, we were trying to get a test track up in Fairbanks for testing, winter testing of car manufacturers of vehicles. During that period of time, I found out how many there were. There were just literally lots and lots of worldwide car manufacturers that were using the interior for cold weather testing. They would come to Fairbanks. Nobody knew they were there. They'd have their cars disguised, and they would do their winter testing and then move on. It was a pretty good size. It is a pretty good size industry. Just over this last weekend, I was home, and I had three people came to me and said that they test drive every winter for different manufacturers. And it's surprising how many people do. It was brought to our attention a little earlier this year that the Volkswagen of America had brought up some test vehicles last winter. They had done their testing, and then come to find out there were some changes in emission regulations, and they needed to come back a second year. They came back, and the Department of Motor Vehicles told them that they would have to have those vehicles titled and licensed for them to utilize them up here again, because there was no statutes that allowed for any of temporary licenses for test vehicles. So this bill basically goes into straightening out the statutes where that they can get license plates that up to 36 total months over 12-month renewals. And this would allow that winter testing program's ability to go forward. And I think it's very important to the state of Alaska to have this economic development driver that utilizes a lot of mechanics garages, warehouses, and drivers. And so it's pretty good bill that straightens out some problems that we have. And I have to get up to finance, or I apologize, but I'm going to turn this over to my Chief of Staff, Jane Pearson, who will more in-depth explain the bill and the CS and answer any questions. And I know that we have some people that are experts that are wanting to testify to this bill also. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Thompson. And you go on back up to finance. And I would like the record to show that Representative Lynn has joined us. And Mrs. Pearson, if you want, go ahead and go through the bill with us.
Okay. For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, Chief of Staff to Representative Steve Thompson. Basically, what this does is create a license plate for experimental cold weather testing vehicles that would be issued by DMV. It would be good for 12 months. It could be renewed two times for a total of 36 months. These vehicles have to be either by a manufacturer or distributor, so it could not be Joe Blow, who makes an experimental vehicle in his garage. Okay. DMV really didn't want that. And one of the deals is when these vehicles leave Alaska, they either leave for good or they are destroyed. So you do not have a bunch of untitleable vehicles in Alaska. These vehicles can't be titled because they are experimental vehicles. They are not production vehicles, so it's quite different. So this just basically goes into the registration, 2810-181, the registration of unique and special vehicles and vehicles used for special purposes and special registration plates to create a plate that could be used for cold weather experimental vehicles. And it is a big, I think you'll hear from FEDCO that this is a pretty good economic driver in the interior. And that's about all I have. And if you have questions, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Okay, Representative Lynn.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. The cold weather testing, I certainly understand that. But is there not other testing that could be done in Alaska other than cold weather? Because cars are tested, vehicles tested all over the world in every kind of climate. Is there no testing that could be done in other rugged areas, perhaps, of Alaska?
Representative Lynn, through the chair, I did check with DMV, and there is currently no other testing going on in Alaska. However, if the committee thinks that this would be a good thing to do, we could speak with DMV. I believe Shelley Mellett is on the line. She is deputy director of DMV, and she could probably fill you in a little bit better on this. We have worked with DMV on this and with Volkswagen of America to make sure it would work for both of them.
Follow-up,
Representative Lee.
Yeah, I would think, there's no other testing going on in Alaska now, but for economic development, maybe there should be, because we have a large state, all kinds of vehicles that can be tested up here, and I hate to close the door on something other than cold weather.
Representative Lynn, through the chair, I mean, the sponsor, I do not have a problem with that. I would prefer if we ran it by DMV and just make sure they don't have a problem with it.
Thank you. I'd like to pursue it later on.
Okay, thank you. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am supportive of this, definitely. I know how much it's important, but I'm also not wanting to leave money on the table, as it were. So let me ask you a couple questions with the Chair's permission. We looked into this. Minnesota is the only other state that does cold weather vehicle testing, I guess, in International Falls. I guess they do that. And in Minnesota, they are charging $50 for the first four plates and $35 after that for each one. It expires every December 31st, and it does not prorate throughout the year and so forth. So I'm just curious, what does this do in a competitive position for us? How much does it cost the first year? What's the renewal? Where are we? Are we over-competitive, under-competitive? You know what I'm saying?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, that's a great question to ask DMV. We have not had communications on what this would cost. They do other other specialty license plates, which I believe are around $35, but I'm not sure. So I think DMV is the people.
All right.
And Shelley Mellett is online. So Shelley, will us ask her those questions. Shelley, are you there?
Yes, this is Shelley.
Introduce yourself and your affiliation, and have you been listening?
Yes, Madam Chairman. This is Shelley Mellett, Deputy Director of Division of Motor Vehicles. Currently, the price would be $90 a year for registration fees for an experimental vehicle because they fall under commercial vehicle rates. And then I know that Representative Lynn asked about taking off the cold weather testing portion. We don't have a concern with that. We've been up to visit the facility recently in Fairbanks, and currently that's all they're doing up there, but we don't have an issue with taking cold weather off.
All right. Follow up with Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Millott, for your answer. Now, that's $90 a year per vehicle. Do we prorate that? Do we charge $90 each renewal, or is it $90 for 3 years?
Through the chair, Representative Isaacson, that's $90 for 12 months, every 12 months.
So we're a little more expensive than Minnesota might be, I take it. If I may, Madam Chair, Ms. Millott, do you set the fee structure? That is, DMV set the fee structure, or how would that be? How would that be set?
The fee structure is set out by the legislature and statute. It's set out in 2810-421, and they would be considered a commercial vehicle. So.
Follow-up.
So if we wanted to make a special category, such as Representative Lynn was suggesting, a vehicle testing category, we as the legislature could set that up inside of this bill, perhaps?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Shelley, this is Representative Wilson, and if we just took out the cold weather and just say the testing for the experimental vehicle testing, that would be enough for you to be able to be a little more flexible?
Yes, Madam Chair, that would be fine.
Okay, thank you. We have some more. Are there any other questions from the committee? Because we do have some people online that would like to make some comments. Okay, let's go to Virginia. Allison Earhart from Virginia, could you give your affiliation and your name and let us hear your testimony?
Sure. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. My name is Allison Earhart. I am an attorney at Volkswagen Group of America, which is the kind of parent company of the Volkswagen operations in the United States. Excuse me. And, you know, we are very much in support of this bill. Basically, I'm an in-house attorney, and I specialize in licensing matters. I can attest that this bill would allow Volkswagen Group of America to continue to perform its cold weather testing in Alaska. Representative Steve Thompson did accurately state basically what had happened. Originally, Volkswagen Group of America would come in, test their vehicles, and apply for a one-year registration. However, with more stringent EPA standards, it kind of became necessary to bring the vehicles back in for subsequent years. And there wasn't really any provision available for us to do that. So that's kind of when we reached out and just started to explore what was going on.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions?
Sure.
For Allison? Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony. So as set up, this is fine. It doesn't need to be changed. Except for perhaps, as suggested by the chair, we remove the mention of cold weather and just make it for experimental vehicle testing, not worry about fees or anything else. This would be adequate to keep Volkswagen in business in Alaska?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony, Allison. Let's go to Fairbanks, Jim Dodson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Jim Dodson. I am president of Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation. Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation has been promoting cold weather testing in Alaska for more than 20 years. This is a growing industry, creating jobs and diversifying the economy of the interior and all Alaska. For a number of years, we've partnered with the city of Valdez and the community of Big Delta to attract the cold weather, automotive and aeromotive industry to Alaska to do their cold weather testing. Today, there are at least four car manufacturers cold weather testing in Fairbanks. We advertise Fairbanks as the most accessible, reliable, and affordable place in the nation to do cold weather testing. This industry creates more than 200 jobs annually in Fairbanks. It is a growing industry. It is an industry that, as a state, we've had to put no money into it to attract. We have the resources in the state to provide cold weather testing, and I urge your support of this legislation as it is rewritten.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions for Jim? Seeing none, thank you for your
thank you.
We do have one. Representative Gaddis.
And it's, thank you. You indicated that Fairbanks is the least expensive place in the nation to do this testing. I was just trying to figure out how, I mean, I realize that it's the coldest and some other things, but how did we get to be the least expensive?
When you factor in the accessibility and the reliability of cold weather, if for example, somebody goes to Minnesota to cold weather test and they fail to produce cold weather, then they've lost the opportunity. That's where the affordability comes in. It's coupled with the reliability and the accessibility.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I can remember, I lived in Tok for 4 years, and I can remember when we had the temperatures that went clear down to 78 below without a wind chill factor. So it does get pretty cold up there. So let the record show that Representative Feige has joined us. And let's go to Fairbanks another time. And Julie Emsley?
That's right, Emsley. Thank you. My name is Julie Emsley, and I also work at Fairbanks Economic Development, and I'm the cold weather testing project manager there. And I also, of course, wanted to voice my support for HB 176. It should come as no surprise to anyone that everyone around the world associates Alaska, and especially the interior, with cold weather, and we experience that consistent cold weather conditions that Jim was talking about that's difficult to find anywhere else in the world and sometimes often impossible. So when you combine that with our facilities and the vibrant service industry we have here, Alaska has become a prime location for companies to cold weather test their products. This brings significant impact, positive impact to our community and the Alaskan economy. And Fairbanks, it's estimated that that cold weather testing activities generate $500 million annually for the economy, the local economy. And the automotive testing industry in particular heavily utilizes Alaska in the interior for cold weather testing. So it was recently brought to our attention at FEDC that some of our local automotive testing companies are running into issues with Alaska's current vehicle titling and registration regulations. And as was kind of stated earlier, this was largely become an issue now because of changing federal regulations on emissions. And so our current regulations make it it's incompatible with what these car testing companies need to do the work that they're trying to do here. So I believe that HB 176 offers a solution to this problem we have, and it, not only does it remove a barrier to the automotive testing industry here in Alaska, but I believe that it doesn't infringe on the DMV's ability to carry out their mission as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I now am turning to the committee to see what your
question.
Representative.
For somebody. Does any of the cold weather testing or other testing involve a change in the emission system? Or they might have different type of emission systems in the cold. Is there any provision for experimental type emission systems?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that question. Would you mind repeating that?
Yes. This question went to you or to anybody else in the committee or here testifying locally. Does any of the cold weather testing involve alternative emission systems? I can see, I'm no engineer, but I can see where one emission system might be performed better in the cold than some other emission system. Is there any provision for alternative emission systems that might, if we didn't fix that, might run afoul of whatever emissions laws we have in Alaska? And I don't know what they are.
Do you know anything about that, Shelley?
Madam Chair, no, I'm not aware of exactly all the types of testing they're doing. They did mention to us when we were up there that Part of the reason they needed it longer than 12 months now was because of the requirements from EPA on the admission test, that they test them for longer periods of time.
Right. And I am a little bit familiar with that, and a lot of the gas, it has something to do with the gasoline and what kind of gasolines that we're using, and they're trying to make changes. Well, they have made changes all over, and we're actually trying to get some exemption for Alaska. So, but I can see where you would need to do that and then come back if you have to make a change to come back and recheck it. So thank you very much, Ellie. Oh, we have a question from Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for one of the FEDC folks. I was wondering how Valdez figures into Fairbanks cold weather testing, what the partnership is. One of the FEDC people mentioned that Valdez is partnering with Fairbanks for cold weather testing. I was wondering what that partnership was.
I could speak to that. You know, we've partnered with City of Valdez in the past, partly because Valdez has the snow aspect of it that we don't necessarily have here. Valdez gets high volumes of snow, so as far as companies are interested for that particular purpose, Valdez offers that. And so we've partnered with City of Valdez in the past to see if that might be a way so when car companies come here to test that they can get everything they needed within the state. And so they've attended trade shows with us, and they also serve as a place that we can refer companies to that are looking for just for that snow, really, is what their specialty is.
Okay, thank you, Shelley.
Good.
Follow-up, Representative?
I just wonder if there are other ways we can make our bad weather economical for the state.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to, if there's no other questions, I'm going to close public testimony. Oh, Representative Isaacson? No, okay. All right. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to make a conceptual amendment to move the mention of cold weather on line 6, 7, and 11.
Okay. Not hearing any objection. Amendment number one.
Objection for discussion.
Sure. Okay. Representative Feige, you weren't here previously, but it was talked about before, and we checked with DMV here, and we checked with also with Shelley to see if that would make any difference, and Allison in Virginia, who is the attorney for Volkswagen Group of America, and they told us that it wouldn't make any difference if we took out the cold water, cold weather. So, I'm open for any other questions.
Remove my objection.
Okay, the objection has been removed. And so conceptual amendment number one has passed. All right. Any other discussion from the committee? And what are the wishes of the committee? Representative Isaacson.
Madam Chair, I move CS for House Bill number 176, version U, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and with 1-0 fiscal note. I think it's the 1-0 fiscal note.
Okay, thank you. Hearing no objections, so moved. Congratulations, and you can tell your boss that it's on its way, what, to finance?
To finance.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
I'm going to get your green slip here.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I need one, too.
All right. Now, we'll have a brief break while we sign the bill packet. Okay, we're back to order, and next we'll bring up House Joint Resolution 13, Homeport New Coast Guard Cutters in State. So Representative Osterman is the sponsor of the bill, and he, I know, is up in finance right now, so Melanie Lesh from his office is going to come forward and introduce the bill. So Melanie, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. And members of the House Transportation Committee, as you said, I apologize that Representative Osterman is not here to present the resolution, and it's a fairly short two-pager. My presentation is also short. House Joint Resolution 13 urges the U.S. Congress and the President to complete the funding and acquisition of 3 additional Coast Guard national security cutters and to homeport one of the cutters in Kodiak, Alaska. What the resolution aims to do is raise awareness that the Coast Guard is in the middle of the process of replacing 12 high-endurance cutters with 8 technologically advanced national security cutters, nicknamed NSC, and stressing the necessity of delivering all 8 vessels. We wish to highlight the importance of Alaska strategically in the region, focus on the importance of the increasing role in the Arctic, with more open water in the summer, resulting in increased maritime traffic. Kodiak is the nearest Coast Guard port and would be the base of operations for vessels such as the Bertoff. I might be mispronouncing that, but we have some Coast Guard members in the room who will probably help me. One of the 3 completed national security cutters which patrolled the Arctic this past summer in Operation Arctic Shield. The Coast Guard assists the Department of Defense's national defense efforts with its specialized capabilities in the region and elsewhere. Recently, at a national military conference, the 3 chiefs, the Commandant of the Coast Guard, Admiral Bob Papp, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, General James Amos, and Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Jonathan Greenert, met to discuss maritime strategic issues. A main topic of discussion was the Commander-in-Chief's strategic guidance that in part requires that the U.S. military will of necessity rebalance towards the Asia-Pacific region. So HJR 13 is designed to send a reminder to Congress and the President to complete the program of record for the funding and acquisition of 3 additional NCS cutters. So that we can help the Coast Guard do what they do best. And we have 2 retired Coast Guard captains here to testify, and I'm available for any questions.
Okay, any questions for Melanie? All right, well then let's bring up our experts to testify. And Carl, can you come forward and state your name? I am sorry, but I'm not even going to try your last name. It begins with U, and then there's a C.
Yes, ma'am. Carl, you could tell.
You could tell.
And I am a retired Coast Guard captain who sailed in Alaskan waters and who served as a commanding officer of the icebreaker Polar Sea. And I command and wholly support this committee for taking action encouraging the federal government and the Department of Homeland Security to maintain a national security cutter presence in the state of Alaska. A national security cutter strategically homeported in Alaska would not only provide a multi-mission platform to serve the coastal communities in times of need, but perhaps more importantly, will build mission capacity for the Alaskan resident crew to better understand the unique challenges faced by mariners sailing in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska. Thank you for hearing my testimony for House Joint Resolution 13 and for your support of the Coast Guard in Alaska.
Okay, thank you. And obviously we've opened public testimony. And Representative Isaacson, you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, 2.
Okay.
If I could. Is 3 enough and is 1 enough for Alaska? In light of what we just saw in the joint session.
Representative, through the chair, I'm a retired Coast Guard captain, just like my colleague Ed Page, and so we're not really speaking on behalf of the Coast Guard needs. We have the privilege of being retired to speak frankly when asked to speak. When we're invited, we can provide our opinion of what's necessary. Of course, we always think we have the best interests of the Coast Guard, an organization that we spent 3 decades each in. So sometimes I think we can come across as honest brokers, but of course, if to answer your question directly, certainly the 33,000 miles of coastland in Alaska, the number of ships that you would need to support that you would have in, down south, that's you'd need much more than three.
Follow up,
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. I appreciate the judicious answer, Captain, and I appreciate the fact that you're retired, which, and I know that a resolution does not empower neither the state nor the feds with any demand. I mean, we're not saying do it. It's not an executive order. I just wanted to get that answer that you were saying. By far, this is way too small. If I could just, you mentioned in your testimony you're a retired icebreaker captain as well. Did I hear that right?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, yes. I was sort of half my career on icebreakers, so I know we're talking about, the resolution has to do with national security cutters, so if this was a different venue, I'd be touting the needs of the nation, the needs of Alaska, to build and sustain a viable icebreaker fleet.
Madam Chair, if I could, if this was speaking about icebreakers and so forth, with your permission, could I just ask one question about an icebreaker?
Sure.
Is it feasible to support an icebreaker home port in Alaska, or is, in your estimation, is that something that we should just keep separate from all these other boats and let them stay down south?
Representative, through the chair, that's a very good question. You know, especially with the national security cutter, they're very high tech. They will have there'll be high demand technical support that's required shoreside to meet the requirements of that crew. Doesn't mean that capacity can't be built in a port like Kodiak. It probably doesn't exist right now to really maintain a national security cutter. Same could be said for an icebreaker, that really the amount of depot level support required to maintain high-tech vessels would be a capacity that would need to be developed.
So we could say build it and they will come?
Yes, ma'am.
So, Madam Chair, just to clarify one statement that he said about the cutters.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, if I heard you, Captain, you said that even if we asked for a cutter to be here, we don't necessarily have the technical expertise at port at this moment?
Representative, through the chair, that would be my opinion as a retired old guy.
All right.
I might give you a different answer, but it could be built, but it doesn't exist right now, in my opinion.
Hopefully, with this resolution, we would be encouraging, I guess, that build out as well. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Feige has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the supporting document, it says they're using this new class, this Legend class of vessel, to replace the high endurance cutters. What's currently based in Kodiak?
Through the chair, right now, the Coast Guard Cutter Monroe is a 378-foot high-endurance cutter. Okay. So these high-endurance cutters were built in the late 60s, early 70s. There was 12 of them. The Coast Guard is in the process of decommissioning those 12 to replace them with 8 of the national security cutters is the plan. Currently, only 5 have been funded. And part of this resolution is to provide encouragement to the federal government to build the remaining 3. And if I may, I'll also throw in that my son, also in the Coast Guard, is assigned to the Monroe in Kodiak right now.
Okay. Pretty good, thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, Representative Lynn has a question.
You may not be the person to ask, but I see down here on page 2, line 20, we're going to send the copies. Why do we not have the President of the United States and the Secretary of the Treasury?
Maybe the
Coast Guard's not in Treasury anymore.
Well, isn't it? What does the Coast Guard come under?
Representative Lynn, through the chair, it's the Department of Homeland Security is the department.
Did it used to be Treasury?
Mm-hmm. It was a Treasury, and then it was Transportation.
Okay.
And now DHS.
I apologize for my age.
Okay, thank you very much. And Ed Page, can you come forward?
Accumulated wisdom in history.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Edward Page. I'm also retired Coast Guard captain and served
in the Coast Guard for some 30 years. In fact, I was a Coast Guard cutter, high-endurance cutter, the Boutwell that first brought me to Alaska back in 1973. Even then, we were in the Department of Transportation. I think it was 1968 we were in the Department of Treasury, as I recall.
Yeah,
so
19,
we are dating ourselves,
19,
sir.
Not 18. Okay. So,
in any case, I applaud this. Well, actually appreciate having been a retired Coast Guard. I'm out now for about 12 years. I've retired from the Coast Guard. But while I was in the Coast Guard, and I sort of had several assignments up here, up in Anchorage, Ketchikan, and Juneau, I've always enjoyed a very good relationship with the state of Alaska. And it's one of those areas where the Coast Guard truly feels appreciated by Alaskans. And, of course, that makes sense in light of the nature. It's a maritime state. There's no state more maritime than Alaska. So it's a very symbiotic, very good relationship that I've been very fortunate to be part of that. So I also applaud that your efforts to encourage the presence of more Coast Guard cutters. And I'm coming from a little different perspective than Captain Ugutel, who served as on cutters many years up here. I was more in the operation of support operation, or actually marine safety programs. So I was a chief of marine safety at one point for the Pacific area, and then a chief of marine safety for Alaska, and involved decisions of allocating cutters and enforcement oversight and fisheries and what have you. Clearly, as my predecessor had been mentioned, the enormity of the state of Alaska makes the challenge even greater than it's ever been. And to exacerbate that problem, of course, is the fact that now it's getting more water due to the climate change and the Arctic opening up and more traffic and more activity in offshore exploration. I was on some of those drilling platforms back in 1984 when they were initially doing exploratory drilling in the Chukchi Sea. A whole different environment today now. Things are finally starting to gel and starting to happen. And the Coast Guard presence, I think, is very important. Much akin to just having policemen on a highway. Not too many people obey the speed limit. It wasn't for the fact that somebody was out there and enforce it. And that's essentially what the Coast Guard does. So the fact, the presence and monitoring, and then when something do go wrong, much like our communities, if something goes wrong, the policeman will show up or the Coast Guard will show up and ensure that an effective response is executed to prevent a loss of life, property, and environmental harm. So as we open up more water, it's totally illogical to say that we have to have more cutters to cover more water. Right? That's one of the metrics they use when you determine where cutters go and how you allocate them. It's just how much water are we looking at and what are the issues and how important are they and what is the Coast Guard's role in doing that. And certainly as when we look at some of the vessels that are snooping around, if you will, or transiting and reconnoitering in Alaskan waters, looking at our resources right now as the United Nations Law of the Sea Convention is being deliberated as far as our role on it. Clearly, people, other nations, and China most remarkably, have a great interest in tapping the resources right along our shores or just offshores. So once again, I think that it's likely that, maybe I'm too presumptuous here, but it's a good potential that the United Nations Law of the Sea will exist and will extend our borders even further because of that, because it'll be beyond 200-mile EEZ. And that's going to be another further increase of our jurisdictional areas that we exercise control and authority and our resource that we need to protect. And obviously the Coast Guard is the right agency and the right entity and the right resources to carry that out. So I think you're right on with the bill that you're introducing, encouraging this. I support it. I think it's appropriate. I think it's needed. I think it's timely as we're building these things to figure out where they go to start making these decisions. And clearly, we all know, and I know I'm preaching to people, have the same understanding of the impacts of Alaska on the rest of our nation. Clearly, the whole nation is paying close attention. These resources are used by our nation, make it less dependent on other nations. It has a national impact, national ramifications, fisheries, oil production, development, resource protection, all are national issues. So, and clearly people in Maine and Boston and New York all paying very close attention to what's happened in Alaska. They all have a stake in it in protecting our last frontier. The Coast Guard is best suited to ensure that's done. So. Those are my comments.
And I'm going to follow up with the questions that Representative Isaacson asked. And that is, in your from the area of your being able to sit at a desk and see everything that's going on, how many ships do you think we really need?
Well, I think you could put too many. There's just not enough in the hopper to build. So when you look at the huge, as I mentioned some earlier in a previous hearing, obviously we're present at the I-5, where more and more ships are sailing through our waters as the passage is going to the Far East, and more vessels are going up to the Northern Sea Route, and in some cases even going Northwest Passage. It's a huge area. So, you know, say three, you're still going to be stretched for resources. You still can't be ubiquitous. You can't be there everywhere. These ships basically sit for maintenance and servicing 6 months a year, shipyards or work or rotation. So right there, if you have two, you really only have one ship in Alaska. So we just do the numbers, the math, and it's a simple math problem. Let's realize that that's a good presence, I think a good target, and realistic in light of our status of our nation and resources available and funding, what have you, our budget. But they will be gainfully employed. There's no question. If we had three, they'd be gainfully employed.
Okay. Now, another follow-up question that I want to ask is stationed at Kodiak.
Right.
That's a long ways up to the Bering Sea. And do we need in Alaska to develop another port closer up there so that we can have a presence better situated for anything, any impacts in the Arctic?
Well, I think that's a tough question. The real challenge when you're supporting vessels in the station is really have that capability. And that's why the Coast Guard likes to commingle vessels, to have the support and technical people that can provide the support needed to maintain a vessel. And so when you start stretching them at the end of the supply chain and you're spreading them out, then you're less effective in doing so. As a practical matter, the speed of these vessels, they are, you're basically 24 hours away. If you're in Kodiak, you're 24 hours away to even the Bering Straits, for that matter, because they cover 700 miles in a day, 900 miles a day. So there's a lot of ground they can cover, and that gets you all the way up to, it's almost a barrel.
I didn't realize they could move that fast.
They can.
Wow.
They can. They've got some nice big engines.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you're reading the supporting materials, three are built, five are funded, eight are planned. Do you have any notion where National Security Cutters 4 and 5 are going to be homeported, or is there a possibility they might be in Kodiak?
Through the chair, I really have not been taking that close attention to it. I'm sure that they're going to try to accommodate all the maritime interests along our country. And so it's always been a challenge with the Coast Guard, of course, allocating resources. Everyone wants a small boat station, an air station, their communities. Fortunately, we've been pretty effective in the past with our congressional delegation. I've been very influential in the Coast Guard and been quite responsive to the needs of Alaska. So. But I really don't. Unfortunately, I just haven't paid close. I got another job that I'm doing now that keeps me pretty busy.
Any other questions from the committee? Thank you very much, Ed. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Is there anyone online or anything that might testify? Okay, I'm going to close public testimony. And Melanie, if you'd like to come forward again, is there any?
I'd just like at some point, I would like you to consider maybe broadening the copy to include the President and the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay.
Is that a conceptual amendment?
I'll make that amendment if it's appropriate this time.
I think we might as well go ahead and do it. Representative Lynn.
I would propose a conceptual amendment, page 2, line 20 through 23, where it would fit in to include the President of the United States and the Director of Homeland Security.
Okay. Hearing no objection, amendment number one has passed.
Thank you.
Conceptual amendment number one. Yep. All right. Any other discussion? Any comments? What's the will of the committee?
Madam Chair.
Representative Isaacson.
I move House Joint Resolution Number 13, Version A, from committee with the attached individual recommendations and zero fiscal note. As amended.
Thank you. Hearing no objection, so the bill has moved. So thank you for standing in for your boss. And since we moved both of these bills out of committee today, we will not have a committee hearing on Thursday.
Oh.
So we are adjourned.
Oh.